He had an assistant rabbi when I was, the year that I was confirmed, named Maurice Davis. Maurice Davis later became a senior rabbi of a major congregation, I think in White Plains, but one of those, and became very much a leader in the attempts to defeat the cults. But he was the rabbi when I was confirmed, and he taught the confirmation class. And he taught it in a way that I talked with a lot of people, they've never heard it. Confirmation class quite being taught this way. He took about a half a dozen themes and each theme he spent 4 to 6 weeks on by posing very difficult, mostly theological questions. The one I remember the most was the first theme. He started out the first day and said, we're going to spend the next 4 to 6 weeks talking about whether there's a God. And he then challenges as to, is there a God? How do you know there's a God? And then the next segment was, what is this God anyway that we're talking about? And, he was a wonderful teacher, so he had a lot of influence, and Barnett Brickner had a lot of influence. Abba Hillel Silver was active. He was the senior rabbi at Silver's Temple when I was growing up, and I had a lot of friends who went to Silver's Temple, and so I was exposed to Abba Hillel Silver, who was a great orator, and of course he was a great Zionist in a day when reform movement basically was not Zionist, so you got to hear the other side from him. And then I came to Pittsburgh, when I moved to Pittsburgh, Solomon Freehoff was of course the rabbi at Rodeck Shalom. And he was followed by Walter Jacob. So I've had just a number of great rabbis who I've been involved with. And then through the Hebrew Union College and my activities on their board, I was exposed to Fred Gottschalk, who was the president of the college and was also a great Jewish rabbinic figure. And now Shelley Zimmerman, who was a very powerful orator, now president of the college, who was rabbi at Temple Emmanuel in Dallas, in Central Synagogue in New York before that for many years. So I've been very fortunate in having some really outstanding rabbis that I've had contact with that have really affected who I am, who I am. And there again, it's mostly happenstance. I mean, I didn't plan it that way.
Yeah, but you recognized what you could learn from that.
Yes. Yeah. Going back to, I was bar mitzvah when I was 13, and I was confirmed when I was 16. And in those days at Fairmount, as well as today, they had big confirmation classes. There were 100-plus students in my confirmation class. And well over half the class went on to high school. To Jewish high school at the temple. It wasn't a special, it wasn't like Sadness, it was a high school there. I think well over half, maybe it wasn't, it seemed to me it was well over half. But at least 30, maybe more, went on to high school beyond confirmation. And so I graduated from the Temple High School in addition. And Special Hebrew, you graduated at the same time you were confirmed, and they had a special Hebrew high school. And there were about a dozen or 15 of us who went on to special Hebrew high school and graduated from special Hebrew high school.
How is that different from the Hebrew high school, the special Hebrew?
Well,
or am I
Hebrew, especially that was a name that they gave it. It was a three-day-a-week, a continuation of the three-day-a-week program beyond the confirmation years. I went to the University of Michigan, and my last year in the high school and special Hebrew, or the Hebrew high school and high school at the temple, I was gone. I was in Ann Arbor, and so I had to do, as did a number of others in the class, had to do special assignments and special readings and so forth in order to graduate from that. Because when some of us graduated when you were only 17 years old, and that went until you were 18. So. So we had special assignments given to us, which we had to complete in writing. I remember at the time thinking it was foolishness, but I guess it wasn't foolish, but something must have stuck.
When you were talking about the difference of the classical and the traditional, with a classical reform, is that more from the German Jewish background?
Well, all the Reformed congregations, Fairmount Temple, or Reuben Abbey Temple, was the oldest congregation in Cleveland, the same way that Rhoda Sholem was the oldest congregation here. And some of them started out as Reform, and some of them, when the Reform movement took hold in this country, changed over to Reform fairly early. And they all were German, at least in my knowledge. They were all initially were German, because that's who was here. In the 1850s and 1860s and 1870s, the Jews in the United States, leaving aside the Sephardic, were basically German Jews. And so you see, even in you could have the temple, it was German Jews. But what happened there was that a group split off from Euclid Avenue Temple, because they didn't like some of the Reform practices. They wanted to have different Reform practices. And so that's how Silvers, the temple, got started, because they didn't agree with some of the practices. Some of those congregations, including Fairmount, including Silvers, and including Rhoda Sholem here, developed into classical Reform congregations. But some of them never went that far down the line. But they were all German in one way or another. The Reform started in Germany in the 1820s.
Was there ever a difference in class?
In Cleveland? I think looking back on it, I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back on it, the Reform Jews who belonged to the temple, to Abba Hillel Silver's temple, tended to be wealthier at that time than the Reformed Jews who belonged to Euclid Avenue Temple. I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back at it, I think that was the case. I don't know that that's the case anymore. Both of them have similar memberships. But in those days, I think that probably was the case. The wealthier Jews gravitated towards the classical Reform, which of course was in some ways less demanding than mainline Reform.
Could it be not just in terms of economics, but the people that belonged to the temple,
right,
did they come from Reform families? For instance, your parents did not. So maybe they gravitated to a more traditional...
I don't know that I can answer that. Certainly there were Reform families in Cleveland beginning in the 1850s or early 60s when those congregations switched over. So some of them had to come from Reform families. But Euclid Avenue Temple had to have some in that category too. I don't know enough about the history of how that developed in Cleveland.
Was it unusual for people from the Eastern European countries to be as Reformed? Your family seemed to come earlier than many from that area.
A number of my friends in the congregation that I grew up with had grandparents who were Orthodox and were Eastern European. By the time I was going to school at that congregation, there were a number of Eastern European families who belonged, if I judge by the ones who were friends of mine at the time, for the first or second generation Jews. But the congregations were clearly run by the old line Reformed families, just the same way that Rhoda Sholem was run by half a dozen families, most notably the Aarons. But I don't know, again, I don't know enough about the history of those. I've never really gone back and looked at that history to see. At least in Cleveland, I haven't.
Well,
I've done some looking in Pittsburgh.
Oh.
the I'll tell you a little anecdote that I don't know if you've interviewed Pete Aaron, but you want to interview Pete Aaron as part of this project.
I know Mrs. Aaron has been years past.
Well,
she was interviewed several times.
Okay. Pete Aaron is now the treasurer at Rosh Sholem. And you may want to interview his sister, who belongs to Rosh Sholem, even though she lives in New York. His sister is, he has two sisters, but the one who lives in New York. But in any event, his sister and I are both on the board of the Hebrew Union College. And we had a board meeting in New York about a year ago. And one of the people who spoke at the board meeting, or who taught a Devar Torah, which was really a teaching session, was one of the professors at the college. And he was talking about the background of the Jews, Reformed Jews in the United States. And he had everybody raise their hands on the board whose ancestors came to this country prior to the Second World War. And almost everybody's hand went up. There were a couple people who didn't. And then he said, now, if your ancestors came prior to 1920, keep your hand up. Otherwise, put your hand down. Some hands came down. And he said, now, prior to 1907 or 8, and keep your hands up, otherwise put them down. Some more hands came down. Then he said, prior to 1890, most of the hands came down. Then he said, prior to 1865, which was the end of the Civil War, and there were 3 or 4 hands still up. And then he said, prior to 1840, and one hand was up. And then he said, prior to 1820, the same hand was up, and that was the Aaron's
really?
Hand. Yeah, Pete's sister's hand. The Aaron's came to this country in about 1820 or before. They were among the founding families of Rosh Sholem. Pete's father, his grandfather, his uncle were all presidents of Rosh Sholem. There was a period of time when 8 of the 15 then elected trustees of the congregation were members of the Aaron family. You see that in other Reformed congregations, maybe not as predominantly. So you want to interview, this is an aside, you want to interview Pete Aaron. He can tell you some wonderful things, and he knows a lot of the history. I mean, he's really dug in. It wasn't until the 1970s that domination ended at Rosh Sholem, which was very late in the development of most congregations. It had ended by the time I got to remember things at Fairmount or at Hebrew Avenue Temple. By the time I was in school, it ended there. There's some very interesting stories in some of these old line Reformed congregations and families, especially some of the classical Reformed congregations. I might tell you that my brother, who's 4 years younger than I am, and as I say, a very active medical practice, is also very active in Jewish affairs, including community affairs. He is currently the president of the Cleveland Academy of Medicine. He has served on the board of Jewish Education in Cleveland and on 2 or 3 other charitable boards. His wife is also very active. She was a vice president of the Temple in Cleveland and is the number 2 executive in one of the Jewish agencies in Cleveland right now.
And their names again are?
That's Dr. Dale and Debbie Cowan.
Is she originally from Cleveland?
She's originally from Washington, D.C. My wife's family, my wife's name is Thomas, her maiden name. Funny story, when I was in the military, when I met her on the West Coast, because she and her whole family are from Seattle. And I called my parents to tell them that I was getting engaged. And my mother said, "What's her name, the girl's name?" And I said, "Her name is Terry Thomas." And there was a long pause. In retrospect, it probably was only 5 or 10 seconds, but it seemed like forever. And my mother said, "Is she Jewish?" And I, at the end of the pause, and I said, "Of course she's Jewish." And my mother said, another pause, and my mother said, "Are you sure?" But my wife's grandfather was the founder, was one of the co-founders of the first conservative congregation in Seattle, Washington. And my wife's father was very active in that congregation. That was the congregation we were married in Seattle. It's Herzl Meir Tamim. It merged with another congregation. It was Herzl congregation at the time. And so she grew up with that kind of Jewish background. Whatever it means, my wife doesn't look very Jewish. She's blonde, and she has a short, small nose. And she doesn't look very Jewish. Yeah, you can see the picture over there. When she moved to Pittsburgh, when we moved to Pittsburgh, when I was coming out of the military, and of course her maiden name is Thomas, which in Pittsburgh is not a Jewish name. On the West Coast, that's a Jewish name. In Seattle, in Los Angeles, there was a great conductor, Michael Tilson Thomas. That's originally Tomaszewski. That's the same, probably the same family name as my wife's family name. But here, Thomas is not a Jewish name. And there are a lot of people who think that at some point or other she converted. Mary going back. The fact is, she didn't convert. Her whole family is Jewish. As I say, her grandfather founded the shul there.
When did her family come to Canada?
I don't know.
So you don't know the story about the name?
I do not know the story about the name. I do know that her family ended up in Seattle, did not come through the East Coast. Some of them did, and some of them are in Boston. There's a segment of her family which we've just gotten reacquainted with, of her family in Boston. Of course, I have some, my mother's relatives are in Boston. Because some of them didn't move from Boston when my mother came to Cleveland. So, and as far as I know, nobody in my family and nobody in my wife's family came through Ellis Island. Not a single person in either family came through Ellis Island.
They came through New York.
They came through Boston. In my case of my family, my mother's family came through Boston and my father's family came through Baltimore. And in the case of my wife's family, they all came through the West Coast. And a few of them came through Boston, but most of them came through the West Coast.
They came from where to the West Coast?
My wife's family is also from Ukraine. But they somehow managed to find their way to the West Coast. There's a small part of my dad's family that went to Argentina. My cousin spent the better part of 2 years trying to track them down. He was unsuccessful. I spent a little bit of time trying to track them down. I was unsuccessful. My dad didn't know how to track them down, so we don't know what happened to them. But they came to Argentina at the same time my grandmother came here. My dad's mother's family, part of us in Argentina. Is in Argentina or was in Argentina. But we were
what
not.
Was their name?
Freeman. My grandmother's maiden name was either Freeman or Freiman, or Friedman in some people pronounce. But we did. We've just been unsuccessful in tracing.
Mr. Cohen, your mother had 3 siblings.
My mother is the oldest. She had a sister who was the next oldest, named Rose, who had never had any children, was married to a man named Abramson. Edward Abramson was an attorney who had an influence on my life because when I was growing up, he was the only lawyer I knew, and I used to go to his office and so forth. So that was probably the origins of my liking or the deciding to become a lawyer. My Aunt Rose died 15 years or so ago. And her husband is in a home, I think, and very ill in Akron. She had the next youngest brother was my Uncle George. George was the black sheep of the family. He after being in the military, or maybe before he went to the military, he married a woman who was not Jewish, my Aunt Thelma, who he met when she was a waitress in a restaurant someplace. And because he wasn't fully accepted, in those days, marrying out of the faith was worse than it is now. He moved first to Gary, Indiana, and ultimately, just after the Second World War, to Las Vegas, where he was one of the great characters that you ever want to meet. He was in the gambling industry in Las Vegas, and he was also a member of the state legislature in Las Vegas, in Nevada. For a time, he was the only member of the gambling industry in the state legislature there. He had two adopted children, one of whom died in a plane crash some years ago. The other, whom I'm in occasional contact with, who lives out in some small town in Nevada. And then my mother's youngest brother.
George, what's
George? That? George took on the name.
What was last name? Oh.
He took on the name Harmon, H-A-R-M-O-N. He took a totally different name so as to get away from the thing. My parents got along pretty well with George. My mother got along pretty well with George, and my dad especially got along well with him. And so after my dad retired, occasionally when George wanted to take a vacation, because he owned a bar and gambling casino in a place called Mesquite, Nevada, about 80 miles from Las Vegas. And when he and his wife wanted to take a vacation, and he used to say you can trust no one in the gambling industry, my dad would come out for two or three weeks and take charge of the money run the money side of the casino and bar operation. And my mother would go out with him. So they got along pretty well. And my mother's youngest brother, whose name was Sam Humans, which is my mother's maiden name, of course, Humans. He married, he was a teacher, and he married, and he has two children with two of my cousins. One is the professor at MIT named Steve, and the other one is a woman named Barbara. My other cousin's name is Barbara. She lives in Erie, Pennsylvania, with her husband. She has children, and Steve has children. Her married name is Snyderman, Barbara Snyderman. She is very active in her congregation. She has been president of her sisterhood, and she has been she sings there, and she belongs to the Reformed congregation in Erie. I don't see her as often as I see Steve, because I get to Boston more than I get to Erie. My dad had a sister and a brother. Actually, had a brother, two brothers, but one brother died when he was five. But he had a sister and a brother. The sister is the one I mentioned who moved to Chicago, married a man in Cleveland, and they moved to Chicago. His name was Levy, and he changed it to Lane. They have two children, one of whom is my cousin Fred. My cousin Fred was president of Temple Shalom in Chicago, which is the largest Reformed congregation in Chicago, also one of the great classical Reformed congregations that is now no longer classical. And my cousin Fred also is a member of the Board of Governors of the Hebrew Union College, as am I, and he is the vice chairman of the Board of Governors of the Hebrew Union College. And he's been active in Jewish affairs all the way. His sister, my cousin Connie, Fred has three children. They're all married. They all have children. And
so it's Fred Lane.
Fred Lane. Yeah. There is on one of the pro football teams right now a black running back, very prominent, named Fred Lane. And every time I hear Fred Lane when I'm watching pro football, I look up. But it's not the same Fred Lane, obviously. My cousin Connie, that's Fred's sister, was married and has two children, and subsequently was divorced, and her husband died. She never remarried. She's been divorced for 25 years, I guess, or more. And she just does volunteer work in Chicago, but not any major Jewish activities that I'm aware of. My dad's other sister, Hortense, married a man in Cleveland named Borod. Her family name was Borodovsky. She shortened it to Borod. And they have one son, Donald, who lives now in Hartford, Connecticut, and he's married and has two children. He's, as far as I know, he's a member of the big Reform congregation in Hartford, but as far as I know, he's not active. Both my cousin Fred and my cousin Donnie are lawyers.
But not influenced by the same uncle?
No, because that uncle's on the other side of the family. Donnie may have been influenced by me because I'm considerably older than Donnie. Donnie is 12 or 13 years younger than I am.
When you were at your temple, Balfour's temple in Cleveland.
Not Balfour.
I'm sorry.
Barnett. Barnett. Barnett's son.
Right, okay.
Balfour was an infant terrible when he was in school. My mother taught him.
Oh, really?
And she can tell you great stories of Balfour Brickner.
Rabbi Barnett Brickner,
right.
Was he as socially conscious and all of that as his son became?
No, he was not.
I thought maybe that influenced.
No, he was more on the worship and scholarly side.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Balfour isn't scholarly, but he was more on the worship and scholarly side.
Uh-huh.
He in his own right, was one of the, half dozen outstanding Reform rabbis of that era. But in Cleveland, when you have an Abba Hillel Silver, who is, of course, the name, Barnett Brickner was not as well known. I know Balfour. In fact, I saw Balfour Brickner when he was here to officiate at a wedding few years ago, and I went up to him and introduced myself to him. He really didn't know me back then. He was a little older than I am. But he remembered my mother. And I told him that my mother says that he's come a long way from his days in religious school, and she still remembers him in religious school. And he made some comment like, I'll bet I know what she remembers. So,
Mr. Cohen, can we talk a little bit about the actual day-to-day atmosphere in your home, economically or culturally?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure what you mean by all that. Let me, as I say, we have three daughters. They're all grown.
You were still back when you were...
Oh, when I was growing up. Oh, okay. My dad was very, both of my parents are great believers, as you might imagine, in education. And they were very strong in education. And one of my dad's favorite sayings in that regard or in other regards was that there is no substitute for excellence. He really, in very quiet ways, drilled into us that the standard, there's only one standard, and that standard is excellence. And that anything short of that is not acceptable. And he was somewhat on the quiet side. but when he talked with us about things that he felt a lot about, and he did a lot of leading by example. He was also very hardworking. Both my parents were teachers. I remember them telling me stories about the times in the Depression when they were not paid, when the teachers weren't paid. My dad was one of the founding members of the teachers' union in Cleveland. Because of the difficulties that they gave the teachers, you know, at the time, he was not militant, but he believed that if they stood individually, they would get run over. He told me a story about one of the Cleveland newspapers ran an article when the teachers were, in the 1930s, when the teachers were having problems getting paid, and when they got paid, it was a very low amount. And the paper went around and took pictures of the homes, the private homes that some of the teachers lived in. Of course, some of the teachers came from well-to-do background. My dad didn't, but some of them did. They took pictures of the well-to-do homes and had a feature article in which they put a dozen pictures and said, these are the homes that the teachers live in. They're not doing so badly, are they?